everyone. This is The Big Fight, and I'm Maria Shakil. This week has seen a reset in India, China, which were in the red since the Galwan clashes in 2020. First came the news of an agreement between the two sides to disengage at the key points on LAC in Ladakh. The two sides agreed on patrolling in their respective areas and revert back to the April 2020 situation. And then the big Prime Minister Modi and Xi Jinping bilateral meet in Russia on the sidelines of the BRICS summit. This was the first meeting between the two leaders in 5 years. Both the leaders welcomed the border agreement and stressed on the need to settle disputes with dialogue and to be sensitive to each other's concerns. Now, the disengagement on LAC has begun, and army sources say that it will be complete by the month end. But how far can India trust China, given the checkered history of India-China relations? And will Beijing really walk the talk on the peace move? This is the big question that we ask on the show tonight. Joining me on the show, we have Jennifer Zeng, who is a Chinese affairs expert, joining me from New York City. We have Ashok Kanta, former ambassador of India to the People's Republic of China. Lieutenant General Subrata Saha is a former member of National Security Advisory Board and former deputy chief of Army Staff. And Jiang Gong is a China foreign expert, and Brahmachalani is a strategic affairs expert. I'm going to begin with you, Jennifer. What do you think was the reason and what significant shifts occurred in India's and China's positions that enabled this disengagement? What is the reading?
I think we all understand we are now in a very fast-changing world. The situation in between Russia and Ukraine in the Middle East, and also what happened right now with the United States, with some called the most important election in the history of America. So with all this fast-changing geopolitics, of course, the CCP's Chinese Communist Party's long-term goal of attacking Taiwan, or what they say about reclaim Taiwan. So you need to look at the new whatever agreement between India and China under this bigger picture, and what's really the most urgent and important matter in the CCP's mind. And another issue, maybe the outside world failed to pay attention to, is the domestic political situation and the power struggle inside China. So we've observed a number of very unusual, you can say, phenomena, which is questioning the political stable, or whether there's a political stable state in China. So all this we need to consider together. So, at the end of all, the CCP is never to be trusted.
Okay. And Lieutenant General Saha, you know, how can India and China really build on this momentum to resolve outstanding border disputes and strengthen bilateral relations?
Yeah, so thanks, Maria. Firstly, you know, I think it's too early to call it a momentum. It's just the start of the process, and we have to be a little patient. And yeah, for sure, it whatever be the motivations of China, whether it is to, you know, kind of de-stress the economy. The previous speaker spoke, Jennifer spoke about political domestic struggles within, or whether it is to get away from a two-front scenario. The point is, from India's point of view, I think first and foremost, is the ability to go and patrol these areas, which I think for long we have not patrolled. And I must mention that these patrol areas, particularly the ones in Depsang, are actually short of the LAC. These were restrictions which were imposed sometime in the late 70s, I think 78, and we are going up till that, and even that had stopped from 2020, which was not good at all. So I'm glad that that is opening. And likewise, if you see the other one, as we are hearing, is the CNN Junction, as they call it, Chardung Nilum Nala Junction. So that's another one in the area of Dimchok, on which, I mean, there's a number of times that we have had face-offs and things like that. Night patrols face off also several occasions. So I'm glad that that patrolling business is happening.
Okay.
And if you look at the immediate, future, I think, as we all understand, all the peace and tranquility agreements, whether it is the 93, 96, 2005, 2013, all of them were turned on their head after 2020. So really, it's a big, long process to start reviewing all of that. Because, for example, we never had buffer zones, nobody has spoken about the buffer zones, whether it is in Pangong's or North Bank, whether it is the Gogra Hot Springs, whether it is, Galwan. So now how are we going? This is a new dimension in the entire scheme of things. In fact, very senior people have recently commented that we have to wait and watch how the trust builds. So I think this is critical on the review of the peace and tranquility. And of course, in the long term, the announcement has been made that the two special review representatives, i.e. NSA from India's side and Wang Yi from the Chinese side, should meet at the earliest. Well, that obviously is the long-term objective. If that can happen, wonderful. But then it is a period which we will have to, deal with a lot of caution and, of course, certainly optimism. I'm not saying don't be optimistic, but it is a period which will require a lot of caution.
Lieutenant General Sir, thank you for saying that we have to be circumspect at this moment because of the checkered history between the two countries. But Brahma Chalani, come in on this. Jennifer spoke about economic pressures. How did economic pressures, according to you, including trade disruptions and sanctions, impact the decision to disengage and the shift in Indian and Chinese positions?
China is clearly running into long-term structural constraints, including a deepening demographic crisis, slowing economic growth, slowing productivity gains, and also as well as debt issues. One doesn't know whether these structural issues played a role in Xi Jinping's readiness to resolve matters with India, but he made a terrible miscalculation in 2020 when he ordered those encroachments on Indian borderlands in East Ladakh. And what's happening now is a good move toward rapprochement between China and India. These two countries make up one-third of the global population, and any kind of rapprochement between them will have global implications. Having said that, we should keep in mind that disengagement is just the first step. There has to be de-escalation and de-induction of forces. That will be a long-haul process because China has actually changed facts on the ground. It has created new military realities by building permanent infrastructure, especially underground infrastructure, all along the Himalayan frontier. And while we are focused now just on two areas in East Ladakh, the fact is that there are military standoffs elsewhere along the Himalayan frontier, including on the Sikkim-Tibet border, Arunachal-Tibet border, and according to what's appearing in the Indian media, that some of these other standoffs also are going to be slowly resolved, hopefully, because the details have not been finalized. So it's going to be a long process. And I think that one has to keep in mind that the last time there was a disengagement deal between China and India, that happened in 2017. It happened after a 73-day standoff on Doklam Plateau. That disengagement did not go well because the Chinese gave the impression that they were disengaging. They did withdraw some forces, but then they came back. And then they began building permanent infrastructure on Doklam. And within 3 to 4 months, they're actually effectively captured the entire Doklam plateau. So we have to be very careful because, the hype in the Indian media about a breakthrough is a bit premature because many of the things have yet to be negotiated. And the implementation of the first process itself will take some time. And I think we should therefore not get swept away by this hype.
Okay. So you agree with Lieutenant General Saha that there should be a great degree of caution, but optimism, yes. So, Jiangong, there is this sense that China cannot be trusted. because there was a process of disengagement which began in 2017, and then we saw what followed. So the question really is that we are trying to understand the India position, what led India to change its position and go in for this disengagement. What about the Chinese?
Well, first, let me start by saying that what we have done so far is really for the purpose of maintaining a peaceful situation with India. I think the argument that this is motivated by something related to Taiwan or something related to domestic politics is a laughable argument. It's just not a serious argument at all. I think this is purely motivated by the need to make progress at the BRICS summit. The fact that China's geopolitical calculation is making some adjustment. And I think this kind of adjustment is also on the part of India as well. India is also trying to make a balance between, you know, on one side, keeping connections with the West, on the same side, also keeping relations with the members of the BRICS community. I think if you look at the economic situation, you know, the trade between China and India is actually booming. Regarding your question about whether China, you know, is trusted or not, I think that's just very much an Indian perspective. I think the conflict that interrupted in the 1960s and later in the 1980s has many reasons. And I think, I can fully understand that the Indian side will attribute everything to the Chinese side, but I could equally argue that the Chinese side will say pretty much the same thing. But the fact of the matter is that we need to move forward. And do not look back. And I think that this settlement at least is a step in the right direction. We need to. There's no really need for fighting over a vast amount of land that's totally manless land. You know, there's nobody living there. There's no need to fight over that. I think it should be on a negotiating table. Both sides seriously talk about it and try to reach a settlement. And at least I think the agreement about the patrol issue is definitely a step in that direction.
Okay. So then, Ambassador Kantha, help us understand, was there any international mediation here which perhaps was instrumental in facilitating this disengagement, or was it a realization only on the part of these two countries?
I don't think there was any international mediation. Foreign Secretary Vikram Misri mentioned that Russia provided the venue because the BRICS summit was in Kazan, Russia. So Prime Minister Modi and President Xi met there. Apart from that, I'm not aware of any international mediation. I'll be very surprised if there was any international involvement in India and China working out their own differences. That's not the history of India-China engagement. But let me also come in here and comment on some of the points made by other colleagues. First, I will share the sense of caution reflected in remarks made by General Saha and Professor Chalani. We need to put this understanding in perspective. Just look at the media readouts coming from Indian side and Chinese side. We are calling it a complete disengagement and resolution of issues arising out of developments in 2020, whereas Chinese readout doesn't even use the word disengagement or agreement. It only says that important progress has been made. Now, what progress has been made? Facts are still not clear to us. They have not been made public. But Foreign Secretary has clarified that disengagement arrangements discussed and announced on 21st October are limited to Debsang Plains and Demchok. As General Saha mentioned, we were visiting certain patrolling points. It's the expectation we'll resume visiting. But, fine print matters here. What will be limit of Chinese patrolling on our side of the LAC? Because essentially, we are talking about these areas which are on our side of the LAC. What will happen to various structures which have been developed there? What will be nature of patrolling? Will there be restrictions of patrolling by us? All these issues remain unclear. Moreover, equally important, we had problem in other areas as well. in Galwan Valley, where we had a bloody clash on the night of 15-16 June 2020, Gogra, Hot Spring, Pankung Lake area. What was agreed upon earlier involved creation of buffer zones. As General Shah mentioned, that this is concept alien to management of India-China borders, and it involved imposition of restrictions on patrolling by Indian troops on our side of the line of actual control, access by Indian graziers to grazing grounds they were traditionally using. So as long as that is not resolved, what Army Chief mentioned on 22nd October in a public speech, that we would like to see restoration status quo as of April 2020.
Right.
That will not be achieved because buffer zones were not there. These restrictions were not there. Let me, you know, quickly make two other points. You know, we are talking about disengagement, but there's equally important issue of demilitarization of border. Our nature of border has been changed completely. So there will be a difficult, complex process of de-escalation of troops along the borders, most specifically in eastern Ladakh. And besides, you know, what came out of meeting between Prime Minister Modi and President Xi was essentially re-engagement between two countries. We are far from reset in relations. In fact, the process of normalization of borders will also take quite some time. And only after borders have been normalized, we should look at normalization overall relations, let alone reset the ties, because there are a whole lot of structural difficulties between India and China which should not be overlooked.
Okay, so these structural differences that we are looking at, General Saha, what lessons can be drawn from this five-year standoff and subsequent disengagement which is happening?
You see, Maria, ultimately, whatever we have seen now is the outcome of 17 border personnel meeting at a little higher level from routine, at the core commander level, and 21 meetings of what is called WMCC, Working Mechanism for Consultation and Coordination. Frankly, the two higher upper tiers, the annual defense dialogue, which happens with the defense secretary leading the Indian delegation, that hasn't happened. And the highest level, of course, our NSA has been meeting Wang Yi in different forums, but not strictly in what is called the strategic representative level talks. So really the two upper tiers have not happened at all. So if you look at the current framework, only the two which are lower in the pecking order have been able to achieve something, and I would not for a moment trivialize the importance of the higher directions that they have got, because actually we got first hints of what might be coming after the NSA's meet, BRICS NSA's meet in September this year. That was the time you could see that there was a statement which was suggestive of an expeditious, you know, words to that effect, resolution of whatever was being discussed on the ground. So therefore, I think the important point here is these structures which have been lying defunct for so long, they need to be revived early. And the challenges, I think, has been brought out by several speakers, Professor Brahmachalani, Ambassador Kantha. I think they are humongous, absolutely. So therefore, we'll have to see, you know, how we are going to deal with this. My one point here is, it is very important because in the BDCA, the Border Defense and Cooperation Agreement 2013, we had emphasized on the requirement of more border personnel meetings. So therefore, one got opened in Kibithu in Arunachal Walong area. I think there is a requirement of opening many more of these BPMs so that at the ground level, we are able to actually, A, talk to each other, B, verify, you know, otherwise we are talking, you know, in broader terms, trust but verify. Verification has to happen on the ground. And so for that, you require a whole lot of BPMs whose points, which require contentious points, which require resolution, can come back to the WMCC and it can be resolved. And frankly, as I look at it, the WMCC has to meet much more frequently than what it was designed for earlier to be able to resolve it if we are serious in what we are trying to achieve. And at the same time, while all this structures of talking to each other are in place, it is important that we parallelly take up further development of our infrastructure and further development of our strategic deterrence. Because for us, let's be sure, the mobilization, although, I mean, it was a very, very rapid mobilization, very resolute mobilization, robust, but it is not easy. Okay. You know, to expect that it'll keep getting repeated every time, I think we need to use this little, you know, elbow space that we have got very judiciously and effectively to be able to make ourselves prepared for any contingencies that may arise in the future.
Okay, so Jennifer, just take this thought forward in terms of mechanisms which will be put in place to verify and monitor this entire disengagement process from the Chinese side.
Yeah, I agree. I think I remembered Michael Pompeo, the former U.S. Secretary of State, said whenever you deal with the CCP, it's distrust and then verified. In terms of how important the CCP regards or look at this agreement or whatever disengagement with India, first of all, there's no whatever formal report about this. It's just only mentioned by passing when they report about the Xi Jinping's meeting with Modi, just one sentence saying there is some progressive development making in terms of the border issue. And when I searched for the Chinese report, the only one article I got is they say they are talking about there's a solution is achieved, but the reason they gave out is because India has now in a very bad situation. Their relationship with Russia is changed because they can't offer any substantial assistance to Russia as China can. So Russia is not happy with India, and also America is not happy with India because America is too focused on the Middle East. So because of India is so isolated in the international affairs, that's why they want to make a peace agreement or whatever with China. So that's how the Chinese commentators are looking at this affair.
They're okay, Brahma Jilani, I'll give you the last word on the big fight tonight. You know, in terms of the next few days, what will you be watching out for? The question that I started the show with, will the dragon walk the talk, and can they be trusted, given the kind of trust deficit that exists?
To answer that question, one has to look at the big picture.
Yes.
Ever since China came under communist rule in 1949, this expansionist impulse of the CCP has been at the root of China's troubles with its neighbors, including with India. How did China become India's neighbor? It imposed itself as India's neighbor by occupying Tibet, which was the historical buffer. Since then, we have seen this expansionist element be deepening relations between China and India. Now, why did Xi Jinping order those encroachments on Indian borderlands in 2020? If he had to, 4 years later, 4.5 years later, withdraw his forces from some of those encroached areas, there's no explanation. That is, if he does withdraw forces, we don't know as yet. For example, in Devsang, they encroached 18 kilometers into Indian territory. Will they withdraw fully 18 kilometers back and allow Indian forces to patrol up to the points they were patrolling earlier? We don't know as yet. So I think one has to be very cautious. And I think in the coming months and coming years, the process that has just begun will have to be implemented in sequential stages. Disengagement to be followed by de-escalation and eventually by de-induction. De-induction is going to be very problematic because of the changed facts on the ground. Given the fact that they have the Chinese have created new military infrastructure, permanent structures, how can there be de-induction? So I think one has to keep in mind that while what we are seeing is a positive trend, its implementation will require further negotiations and further diplomacy.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us, Brahma Chilani, Jiang Gong, Lieutenant General Saha Ashokanta, and Jennifer Zhang. That's all from me on this edition of The Big Fight. I'll be seeing you next week. Thanks so much for watching.